Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are in the middle of the Kentucky resolutions. We still have the Virginia resolution to go through. Jefferson's response to the states failing to appropriately respond and basically insinuated that they were rebellious or what have you. And so we've got that reply from Jefferson. Then we have Madison's report of 1800. And then we have Madison's notes on nullification. So this is not a one-day, two-day type of thing. And just getting through the resolutions and going through the details of what's really going on takes some time. So it requires a little editorializing. So we've been kind of building up. And so the whole point is that what we want you to do is understand what is being said and not to take our word for it. This is why we read these and invite you to actually become very intimate with these documents. These documents on top of the Constitution and the ratification debates of the Constitution in the disparate states, these all put together the picture of the state's superiority, its responsibility, and the necessity for the states if we're going to save liberty, if we're going to save, put aside the fact that we will be saving the world. But if we're going to save liberty for our posterity, then we have to get engaged quickly because we're running out of time. And I don't like necessarily being ignored about this, but I can only do what I can. I can't compel people to and force people to behave better and do what they need to be doing. And so anyway, as you know, the show is sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions that are necessary in solving the problems that we're facing. I have that progressive friend, lifelong childhood friend, Harry. I hope you're listening. We have a comment line, 425-270-5416. I'm not sure if you, because it's been basically a week, I'm not sure if you've enjoyed the Perseid meteor shower, but at least I told you about it, and you had an opportunity, hopefully, to get out and spend a little time at night with a good, clear sky, and see some of these meteors fly by. Anyway, what we want to do is we want to get straight into where we were and move forward with the Kentucky resolutions, because I don't necessarily want to take a month going through these, but this is how important these are. And this is why you need to write down this week and next week and as long as it takes to get through these documents. You want to get these things down so that you can actually download these and actually share this content with other people that do not understand the Constitution and what the heck's going on, and that the good Lord gave us everything we need. This is a bread trail crumb, or I should say, a trail of breadcrumbs, and or what I like to call this is, here are the framers. Here's Madison and Jefferson speaking from the dust and letting us know what we need to do and showing us what they did. To be clear, they're not trying to call for a constitutional convention. Nowhere in here did they ever mention the Article 5 process as the only process, as Meckler asserts, that it is the only process that will deal with federal overreach. Absolutely not. And as a matter of fact, Jefferson basically stated right there that the states themselves, and Madison's going to get into this in very close detail, that when it comes to violations of the Constitution, this is not about nullification. This is not about a convention. This is not about creating a society like the JBS and educating people out of this. This is leaders that understand the responsibility at the state legislatures taking action and getting engaged. This is why I tell you, we really don't need to educate everybody. And once we get the state legislatures educated, then I think we've really, you know, we've gotten over that hump. I think that they can be the ones, they can be the trainers that actually get out in front of their people and start teaching them this information so that people understand that we have a limited and defined constitution as it was stated during the ratification debates, as it was stated by Jefferson at the beginning of the Kentucky resolutions. And so that's what he started off with. He started off with the fact that this is a limited and defined government with enumerated powers. And then he pointed out that they had no power to define and or punish, you know, anything other than treason, counterfeiting, securities, and coins, the counterfeiting of securities and coins, as well as piracies committed on the high seas, as well as offenses against the laws of nations. That's it. They have no control over kidnapping. They have no jurisdiction over murder or cybercrime or drugs. I could go on and on and on. The Constitution is very clear. The limited scope of what the federal government can create. The reason why they did this is to ensure that the federal government couldn't just start aggrandizing its role in stating that, you know, it's going to identify these new laws and crimes and they're going to come after us. Because that's exactly what the King of England did. The whole reason why we do not allow them to enforce their own laws and have the militia do this in accordance with the Constitution is because we didn't want, or they understood the dangers of a standing army, and they understood why it was important that the federal government could not enforce its own laws. So just to be clear, just so you understand this, that what Jefferson is laying out is he's laying out this argument of this defined government that they don't even have the power to make any laws or define any crimes other than the ones that they have delegated to them. And then he starts going through and identifying how each of these acts, of the Alien and Sedition Acts, has violated the Constitution. And so in the fifth resolution, this is what he says: resolved that in addition to the general principle, as well as the express declaration, the powers not delegated are reserved another and more special provision inserted in the Constitution from the abundant caution has declared that, quote, the migration or importation of such persons as any of the states now existing shall think proper to admit shall not be prohibited by Congress prior to the year 1808. I mean, this is where we stopped, and I wanted to read this again. So let me read this citation, this quote out of the Constitution. The migration or importation, in other words, people to immigrate, or people that are being brought in by the state themselves or by people within the states to say, I want to bring these people in, of such persons as any of the states now existing shall think proper to admit, whether that be somebody from Canada, whether that be somebody from Mexico. The states at this point in time had full control. They could do whatever they wanted and shall not be prohibited by the Congress prior to 1808. What happens after 1808? Well, then Congress takes full control over immigration and the importation of people and the migration of people. And so that this Commonwealth does admit the migration of alien friends described as the subject of the said act concerning aliens, that a provision against prohibiting their migration is a provision against all acts equivalent thereto, or it would be nugatory, that to remove them when migrated is equivalent to a prohibition of their migration and is therefore contrary to the said provision of the Constitution and void. So in other words, up until 1808, the states had the ability, and oh, by the way, all the people that they allowed to migrate and or import and or what have you, as the states controlled it up to 1808, The federal government couldn't come in afterwards and say, okay, we're cleaning house and getting rid of all these people. This was literally a compromise. And for the most part, this was really a compromise to bring in slave labor. And South Carolina was the one that was really clamoring because they lost a lot of slaves due to slaves obtaining freedom from fighting in the Revolutionary War. And so, and if you read, this is what we read in the South Carolina ratification debates. So as you start reading this, you can kind of see the context of this. But to be clear, this is not just about slaves. This is about immigrations, importations, and the states being able to control who is coming into them until 1808. Then Congress now has the ability to prohibit and control the migration of all persons and importations of people, period. And so I get in arguments with this with people all the time, and people completely misread and misunderstand this. Go read the ratification debates. The ratification debates are very clear because in South Carolina, they were saying, well, we believe that in 20 years, by 1808, that the rest of the Union will allow, or the federal government and the rest of the Union, all the other states are going to say, well, we're going to allow this to continue. We're, you know, it's not harming anything, and we think it's, you know, actually helping. But that actually backfires on them because the sentiments got worse. And oh, by the way, I got a little backstory because, and I've said this before, but for those who don't listen all the time, you really want to hear what Madison said during the Constitutional Convention regarding this 1808 clause. This 1808 clause really, I mean, he's not a very animated person, but it got him animated when they made this compromise. And we'll get to that when we come back from the break. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.addlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so for those of you who like irony or who like a little bit more evidence of the divine hand of providence involved in all of this, one can just look at, I think it was around August 22nd, and this is when they started really making this huge concession for the southern states in accepting and maintaining slavery. And what ended up happening was when they created this 1808 clause, this is when Madison got his most animated during the entire convention, because it was he that said, who in this room is going to remember 20 years from now
that this Constitution holds this clause that will stop and prohibit this migration, that this needs to be right up front, that the Congress needs to be able to prohibit. And again, it was, like I said, this desire of South Carolina basically growing its slavery cache or group of people that they said, we need this. And so with Madison being so upset, it was only, I think, like I said, the ironicness or the design and the divine hand of providence played out to make sure, because who was president in 1808? Who was elected president in 1808? It was James Madison. Do you think he remembered? You bet he did. And he exerted a lot of energy that he possibly could afford and actually went after the slave trade. And just so you understand, we were heading into the War of 1812 because the harassment was getting worse and worse with Britain. Britain was already surrounding us and getting in a position to actually wage war against us again. And so he still took the necessary resources to actually go after and shutting this down. It took a while. It wasn't the easiest thing, but he was determined to shut this down. In so doing, this actually built up the, what I will just say, as this growing realization by the South that they are losing the let's call it the propaganda war. They were losing this concept that, you know, slavery is a good thing. And so what ended up happening was the Missouri Compromise, the gag order on slavery, all of these things that bad Northern players, because Van Buren, the founder of the Democratic Party with Jackson, Andrew Jackson, Van Buren was the Democrat that called for and actually banned the ability to talk about slavery and or any petitions regarding slavery in the Senate. So in other words, they took up, you couldn't bring it up. It was banned speech. And I'm going, wow. If you start understanding what was going on and how things were actually falling against the Southern states, the way things were done in the Constitution with the 3/5 rule and so forth, it required them to actually do some shenanigans. And unfortunately, James Monroe was president when he allowed the Missouri Compromise to move forward. He should have stopped it. He basically should have said no, no, and he should have actually enforced the equal footing rule, but he didn't. And it's really unfortunate. That's one of the chinks or the blemishes on James Monroe and his presidency. That all being said, going into the 6th resolution, Jefferson states this, resolved that the imprisonment of a person under the protection of the laws of this commonwealth on his failure to obey simple order of the president to depart out of the United States, as is undertaken by said act entitled, quote, an act concerning aliens, close quote, is contrary to the Constitution. One amendment to which has provided that no person shall be deprived of liberty without due process of law. So in other words, the federal government is actually trying to basically take away their liberty. Now, so as he starts arguing this and you start looking at this with slavery, you can see how Wisconsin was on the right path in actually standing up and saying, hey, you can't do this because people have a right. And they have these inalienable rights going back to the Declaration. Moving on, Jefferson says, and that another having provided that, quote, in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to public trial by an impartial jury, to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of the counsel for defense. The same act undertaking to authorize president to remove a person out of the United States who was under protection of the law on his own suspicion, without accusation, without jury, without public trial, without confrontation of the witnesses against him, without heeding witnesses in his favor, without defense, without counsel, is contrary to the provisions also of the Constitution, is therefore not law, but utterly void and of no force, that transferring the power of judging any person who is under the protection of the laws from the courts to the President of the United States, as is undertaken by the same act concerning aliens, is against the article of the Constitution, which provides that, quote, the judicial power of the United States shall be vested in courts, the judges of which shall hold their offices during good behavior, close quote, and that this said act is void for that reason also. So, see, he's going through and he's auditing and identifying all the different things and how they basically prove that these are unconstitutional acts. And it is further to be noted that this transfer of judiciary power is to that magistrate of the general government who already possesses all the executive and a negative on all legislative powers. In other words, he's just basically poking him in the eye saying, you know, it seems like we're creating a king here, folks. Now, getting back to this whole concept of forcing people, and as a matter of fact, I want to go through this again because I want to throw this out here for any of you who have ever had a ticket that has been done by camera and radar, basically identifying what your speed is and sending you a ticket. Because if you look in the Constitution, you actually have a right, because if they're going to take away or fine you or punish you, you have a right to due process. And these are the things that in the criminal process, quote, in all criminal prosecutions, the accused, this is in the Constitution, my friends, the accused shall enjoy the right to public trial by an impartial jury. So in other words, you have a right to sit and have a jury in front of you instead of a judge just determining. And when we're talking about hundreds of dollars, we're talking about hundreds of dollars. I believe that is even within that limit. It goes beyond that limit of what, you know, the framers had created as far as the threshold costs as well. But anyway, the right to public trial by an impartial jury, to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with witnesses, not a camera picture. A camera picture is not a witness. There's nothing in the Constitution that allows this type of electronic data to be utilized. If they want to do this, they have to amend the Constitution to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses. So in other words, if you're being charged, now you have the ability to actually find out who was there and who else was driving so that you can compel them to show up in court. And I will bet you anything that you will actually, if you look at asserting your constitutional rights. And as a matter of fact, there was a gal in Murrieta, California that pushed this issue and actually got all cameras banned. And there's been a movement afoot, and most people are just accepting these camera violation fines and so forth for red lights and speeding. And I'm going, are you kidding me, folks? What the heck happened? You have rights. They can't punish you. They can't call a crime out on you without going through the due process. And this whole thing of traffic court, going and standing in front of a judge that the judge has the final say in America, because this becomes a crime. Can they deny you if you refuse to pay because you don't recognize the jurisdiction, you do not recognize this type of court and proceeding, that you want your constitutional rights being observed? Then what are they going to do? Well, they'll throw you in jail. And in so doing, they're depriving you of that due process that you have a right to. And can they take away your license? Yes, thus harming you and or taking away your ability to drive, commit commerce, and so forth. This is how they start using and actually creating what we would call bully-type tactics in forcing you to behave. Well, you don't have to. And this is where I believe people need to start organizing. As we start taking things back and we get to this point, don't stop. Once we get the state back, get back into your counties and cities and have all of these camera citations removed, because this is all about revenue. This has nothing to do about safety. Because bottom line, more cameras cause more accidents than they do cause safe conditions, because too many people slam on their brakes, they get rear-ended. If you look at the statistics, when people know that this is a camera intersection, then that's what happens. But I just wanted to bring this up because this is one of those things that I think we've been sleeping at the wheel. As Americans, understanding our constitutional rights, we need to start, when we get everything else going, let's not stop. Let's start cleaning house on all of these things and changing the paradigm, because we are not in a government of Big Brother. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so the seventh resolution actually kind of starts building up towards what we need to do, but still identifies. Because the eighth one is really where Jefferson says, okay, now that we've proven all of these problems with these acts, how they violate the Constitution, and how the federal government is operating completely without boundaries and checks, and that what this is what we need to do. So in the seventh resolution, he says, resolved that the construction applied by the general government, in parentheses, as is evident by the sundry of their proceedings, close parentheses, to those parts of the Constitution of the United States which delegate to Congress a power, quote, to lay and collect taxes, duties, imports, and excises, to pay the debts, and to provide for the commonwealth or the common defense and general welfare of the United States, and, quote, to make laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the powers vested by the Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or officer thereof for the aforegoing powers, close quote. And actually, I just added that for the aforegoing powers, goes to the destruction of all limits prescribed to their powers by the Constitution. that words meant by the instrument to be subsidiary only to the execution of limited powers ought not to be so construed as themselves to give unlimited powers. Now, this right here is one of the best clarities outside the ratification debates, succinct and to the point, that the preamble and the necessary and proper clause are not granting or do not grant the general government general powers. And he goes on and says, not to be construed as themselves to give unlimited powers, nor a part to be so taken as to destroy the whole residue of that instrument, that the proceedings of the general government under color of these articles will be a fit and necessary subject of revisal and correction at a time of greater tranquility, while those specified in the preceding resolutions call for an immediate redress. Okay, so what he's actually saying here is he's saying that these things need to be considered as amended and or revised for clarification. The only reason that he believes this is necessary is because they've never canonized the Constitution. And so this is where I got to leave a note, canonized. And so this is where we actually have to really get the canonizing, I get the Constitution Party and other players to the table to actually canonize the Constitution so that we know exactly what everything means in that Constitution and how it was defined. This way, it leaves no guesswork, no interpretation by a judge or some forked-tongued lawyer. And if you're a lawyer, that doesn't mean that you're a bad lawyer or a non-Constitution supporter. But you have to understand that there are many people in your profession. It's almost like, I don't know, if you look at crime as a profession, it's almost like, well, are there some people that are committing crimes that do good? And so it's not necessarily fully equates to that. But, I mean, the majority of all lawyers are actually perverting and or a part of the subversion of our Constitution, because their job is not to support the Constitution. Their job is to support the bar. Anyway, the eighth, especially if you're a bar attorney, eighth, resolve. Now, this is where Jefferson identifies, okay, this is what the states need to do. Resolved that a committee of conference and correspondence be appointed. Bam. Now he's basically calling upon the state of Kentucky and all other states to create a committee of conference and correspondence so that they can start engaging with the other states in talking and conversing as to what and how they are going to interpose with this general government, who shall have in charge to communicate the preceding resolutions to the legislatures of the several states, to assure them that this commonwealth continues in the same esteem of their friendship and union, which it has manifested from that moment at which a common danger first suggested a common union, that it considers union for specified national purposes, and particularly to those specified in their late federal compact, to be friendly to the peace, happiness, and prosperity of all of the states. That the faithful to that compact, according to the plain intent and meaning in which it was understood and acceded to, agreed to, by the several states, it is sincerely anxious for its preservation, that it does also believe that to take from the states all the powers of self-government and transfer them, and you know, if you look at what he's saying and what they were doing at this point in time, he's basically equating it to all the powers of self-government and transfer them to the general and consolidated government without regard to the special delegations and reservations solemnly agreed to in that compact. It's much worse now, folks. It is far worse than what they were doing with these Alien and Sedition Acts. is not for the peace, happiness, or prosperity of these states, and that therefore this Commonwealth is determined, as it doubts not its co-states are, to submit to undelegated and consequentially unlimited powers in no man or body of men on earth, that in cases of abuse of the delegated powers, the members of the general government being chosen by the people, a change by the people would be the constitutional remedy. But where powers are assumed which have not been delegated, and this is where he uses the word nullification, a nullification of the act is the rightful remedy. And he's actually wrong, because these are violations and interposition. This is why Madison never used the words nullification. Never used the words nullification in his formal Virginia resolution and in his report on the Virginia resolution. And it wasn't until much later, when nullification got so perverted by the South, that he wrote notes on nullification, where he actually reaffirms that it was always about the collective states interposing, not nullifying. That every state has a right in cases not within the compact, causes non federis, to nullify of their own authority all assumptions of powers by others within their limits, that without this right, they would be under the dominion absolute and unlimited of whatever might exercise this right of judgment for them, that nevertheless, this Commonwealth, from motives of regard to respect for its co-states, has wished to communicate with them on the subject, that with them alone it is proper to communicate, that they alone, being parties to the compact and solely authorized to judge in the last resort of the powers exercised under it, Congress being not a party but merely the creature of the compact and subject as to its assumptions of power to the final judgment of those by whom and for whose use itself and its powers were all created and modified. That if the acts before specified should stand, these conclusions would flow from them, that the general government may place any act they think proper on the list of crimes and punish it themselves, whether enumerated or not enumerated by the Constitution as cognizable by them, that they may transfer in cognizance to the president or any other person who may himself be the accuser, counsel, judge, and jury, whose suspicions may be the evidence, his order the sentence, his officer the executioner, and his breast the sole record of the transaction, that a very numerous and valuable description of the inhabitants of these states being, by this precedent, reduced as laws to the absolute dominion of one man, and the barrier of the Constitution thus swept away from all of us, no ramparts now remain against the passions and the powers of a majority in Congress to protect from a like exportation or other more grievous punishment. The minority of the same body, the legislatures, judges, governors, and counselors of the states, nor their other peaceable inhabitants who may venture to reclaim the constitutional rights and liberties of the states and people, or who for other causes, good or bad, may be obnoxious to the views or marked by the suspicions of the president, or be thought dangerous to his own election or other interests, public or personal, that the friendliness alien, this is all one sentence, by the way, friends, if you think I'm bad in runaway sentences, this, ooh. Anyway, that the friendless aliens has indeed been selected as the safest subject of a first experiment, semicolon, but the citizen will soon follow, or rather has already followed, for already has a sedition act marked him as its prey, that these are successive acts of the same character, unless arrested at the threshold, necessarily drive these states into revolution and blood, and will furnish new calamities against Republican government and new pretext for those for those who wish it would be believed that man cannot be governed but by a rod of iron, that it would be dangerous delusion were a confidence in the men of our choice, in silence of our fears for the safety of our rights, that confidence is everywhere. Anyway, I'll have to cut it off there. because we're going into a break. And when we come back in the last segment, I'll be able to wrap this up and we'll probably get started on the Virginia resolutions. But we'll be right back after these two promos. Sorry about the long run-on sentence. It's kind of difficult. But anyway, we'll be right back after this. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so backing it up a little bit to the first colon from where we left off, and so I'll just kind of reread a little bit of this, that these and successive acts of the same character, unless arrested at the threshold, necessarily drive these states into revolution and blood and will furnish new calamities against Republican government and new pretext for those who wish it to be believed that man cannot be governed but by a rod of iron, that it would be dangerous delusion where a confidence in the men of our choice to silence our fears for the safety of our rights, that confidence is everywhere the parent of despotism. Free government is founded in jealousy and not in confidence. It is jealousy and not confidence which prescribes limited constitutions to bind down those whom we are obliged to trust with power, that our Constitution has accordingly fixed the limits to which and no further our confidence may go. And let the honest advocate of confidence read the Alien and Sedition Acts and say if the Constitution has not been wise in fixing limits to the government it created, and whether we should be wise in destroying those limits. The only way they can destroy those limits constitutionally is by amending the Constitution. All other continuations and allowing and accepting these conditions and things do not make them constitutional. I want to be clear here, folks, that the only way they become constitutional is through the Article 5 amendment process. Let him say, this is Jefferson again, let him say what the government is, if it not be tyranny, which the men of our choice have con erred on our president, and the president of our choice has assented to and accepted over the friendly stranger to whom the mild spirit of our country and its laws have pledged hospitality and protection. That the men of our choice have more respected the bare suspicion of the president than the solid right of the innocence, the claims of justification, the sacred force of truth, and the forms and substance of law and justice. In questions of power, let no more be heard of confidence in man, but bind him down from the mischiefs by the chains of the Constitution. Wow. That this Commonwealth does therefore call on its co-states for an expression. So I want to emphasize, and he's literally putting it out there now. He basically said to create these committees of correspondence and conference, or conference of correspondence. That this Commonwealth does therefore call on its co-states for an expression of their sentiments on the acts concerning aliens and the punishment of certain crimes herein before specified plainly, declaring whether these acts are or are not authorized by the federal compact. And it doubts not that the sense will be announced as to prove their attachment unaltered to limited government, whether general or particular, and that the rights of liberties of their co-states will be exposed to no dangers by remaining embarked in a common bottom of their own, that they will concur with this Commonwealth in considering the acts as so palpably against or so blatantly against the Constitution as to amount to an undisguised declaration that compact is not meant to be the measure of the powers of the general government, but that it will proceed in the exercise over these states of all powers whatsoever, that they will view this as seizing the rights of the states and consolidating them in the hands of the general government, with a power assumed to bind the states, not merely as the cases made federal cases federis, but in all cases whatsoever, by laws made not with their consent, but by others against their consent, that this would be a surrender to the form of government we have chosen and live under one deriving its powers from its own will and not from our authority and the co-states reoccurring to their natural right in cases not made federal, will concur in declaring these acts void and of no force, and will each take measures of its own providing that neither of these acts... Now, see, this is where Madison completely differs from Jefferson's paradigm at this point. Jefferson goes off and does this in a vacuum, and he does this basically looking at the Constitution with a incorrect paradigm, because he continually looks at each state and independent party as having this right. This is why Madison basically stated that when a individual state, you know, has a problem with the Constitution and laws, whether they be violation, well, actually, whether they be actual problems in the law itself, then the process would be nullification. But when it comes to violations, it is interposition. The states must act, not just basically act on their own and become an island. That actually, in Madison's words, and we'll get to this later, really looks at violating the uniformity clause, because the states have to be treated equally, that the federal government cannot be treating states differently. But anyway, moving backwards, and will each take measures of its own for providing that neither these acts nor any others of the general government not plainly intentionally authorized by the Constitution shall be exercised within their respective territories. I say that that's inadequate, Mr. Jefferson. I say that the states actually have to go in and force the federal government with political force using the Constitution. And we have everything we need today in the Constitution with the 14th Amendment. So bottom line is that we need to actually cooperate and not just basically say we're creating all of these islands, which would actually be the demise, as Madison points out, these islands would be the demise of the Union. Ninth, resolved that this said committee be authorized to communicate by writing or personal conference at any times or places whatever with any person or persons who may be appointed by any one or more co-states to correspond or confer with them, and that they lay their proceedings before the next session of assembly. Now, I want you to kind of look at, you know, why is it that Jefferson really did not take credit for this? Why is it that he wrote this resolution and actually kept it a secret to his death? Very few people knew that he was actually behind this, and that was really more because of Madison. But the fact is, he was, first off, he was Vice President of the United States. And here was an officer in the United States that was actually fighting and going against and rebelling against the president and those who are seated in Congress or seated in Congress. And so he understood that he could have easily been identified as treasonous. And at any point in time, you can be, you know, hauled away and tried. So he didn't want to necessarily, you know, risk that. But he ended up becoming president. The other thing to think of is as he started going down this path, Madison was busy creating the Republican Party, which is why Madison's response in 1799 didn't occur until 1800 during the election year. So what ended up happening is that these men tried to get the other states to actually act, and they didn't. What ended up happening is that these men actually committed a coup in the paradigm of government with the Federalists or against the Federalists in trying to create a centralized government and a more energetic and strong government that is assuming and collectivizing power. Well, instead, these guys created a Republican government, or I should say a Republican Party, to challenge the Federalists, and they won. Now, we don't have a Jefferson and a Madison today. What we have is we have all sorts of people that need to come to the ranks by educating people, by stating these types of things. This is why I am still waiting to get more and more state legislatures coming to the door here to become leaders in the 2022 election. If you're a state legislator and you want to actually get rid of rhinos, you have to start delivering these types of dialogues, these types of narratives to town halls, not just into your own legislative district, but you need to travel around the state. You need to make your intentions and you need to help lead so that those people in the challenging legislative districts get on board with your message and you become the leader in the upcoming session, in the upcoming 2023 session. This all makes sense. It's just about people taking the initiative and leading. I'm going to be reaching out and trying to get these South Carolina, North Carolina, Montana, not Carolina, I'm sorry, North and South Dakota, Montana, Idaho, trying to get these folks to, you know, start actually acting. Yeah, it gets really frustrating. This is why I need your help, because I truly believe if we get more and more people getting engaged, especially if you're in these states, and I will work with you in the state you're in, so that we can start building a coalition, this movement, with the National Liberty Alliance, with the parties, apparatuses, both the Constitution, the Libertarian Constitution Party, the Republican Party, start getting people to have these conversations during these central committee meetings so that people go, wow, you know, this is actually a really, you're spot on. This is what we need to do. Absolutely. And people will recognize the truth. People will get this. It's like breathing air, you know, instead of smoke and crap, dust and all sorts of filth, things that are making you gag and cough. Breathing fresh air is just right for the body. Everybody knows this is right. Absolutely. Anyway, when we come back, we will have the Virginia resolutions in our next episode. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.